The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
The fragile ceasefire between the United States and Iran appears to be under its greatest strain yet. Fresh American strikes have been met with Iranian retaliation. Commercial shipping through the Strait of Hormuz is once again under threat. And President Trump himself has cast doubt on whether the peace agreement is still alive. At the same time, Washington is wrestling with a bitter political battle over funding the conflict. And after taking aim at several NATO members in Ankara, Trump seems to have adopted a more benevolent attitude to Ukraine. Meanwhile, questions are also mounting over President Trump's latest move to dismiss the remaining members of the bipartisan Election Assistance Commission, raising fresh concerns about the health of American institutions ahead of this year's midterm elections in November. And finally, the mystery of the missing Senator Mitch McConnell. Has the Republican Party aped the old Soviet technique of keeping leaders alive for as long as it suited them? Now, to help us separate the immediate military developments from the wider political implications, we're joined by Professor Scott Lucas from UCD's Clinton Institute. Good morning, Scott.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
First of all, is the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, is it dead or on life support?
It's in limbo, Pat. And the reason for that is that we're not at a point where we're going to have a return to the war that had taken place up until April the 7th, primarily because the Trump administration doesn't have good options militarily. But at the same time, we're not going to get movement towards a deal because of the fundamental issue of the Strait of Hormuz. That's that vital waterway through, 20 to 25% of the world's maritime oil and gas passes. Iran controls the strait, which, of course, it did not before the war started on February 28th. The Trump folks want to break Iranian control of the strait because if they don't, they've got no alternative but to move towards a deal on Iranian terms. And that's why we get these clashes that take place, including the most recent this week. The Iranians will fire on a few vessels who are traveling through the strait without their permission. The Americans who would like those vessels to travel without Iranian permission will then retaliate by hitting Iranian military targets in the south of the country primarily. And then after about 48 to 72 hours, everybody takes a step back and we all wonder if we're going to get back to negotiations.
Meanwhile, the Israelis will continue to target Lebanon. And it was the understanding of the Iranians and, to some extent, the Americans that Israel would cease its hostilities in Lebanon. And that hasn't happened.
Well, we're not getting as many civilian deaths as we got. Now, that's, you know, very much a limited blessing at this point because the Israelis are continuing military operations to really set up a long-term occupation of southern Lebanon. How deep it goes, we still wait to see. But it does mean we still get a few deaths each day because the Israelis are trying to pick off certain targets, probably Hezbollah members. But there are still some civilians who are getting killed. So in one incident earlier this week, there was a doctor and effectively the people with whom she was traveling, a couple of her other family members and a Syrian worker, and they were in a vehicle. And whatever happened, whether or not the Israelis had the wrong details on the car, whether they just simply took a pot shot, they killed all four of these people.
Now, the relationship between Trump and Netanyahu, we know it was under strain. Are the Israelis attempting to rehabilitate that in some way?
Well, I think right now the Israelis have also got this election coming up, which is now going to take up a lot of the bandwidth because Netanyahu's facing a fairly serious challenge, not from the left of Israeli politics, I have to say, but from other aspects of the right who really blame him, not just for a bungled war on Iran, but bungling the approach to Gaza over the past couple of years. Because the attention for Israel has moved away from regime change in Iran for the moment to consolidating what they've got in southern Lebanon, as well as that expanding occupation of Gaza, I think everything is sort of in a tense but bearable relationship between Trump and Netanyahu. Now, that's not to say it couldn't spark again, because you do get very, the hardliners, including the defense minister in Israel, talking about the fact of how they are going to bed in this occupation across Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria, and they'll use military action to do it. And will they cross a line where the Americans say, oh, wait a minute, you know, you're threatening our possibility of negotiations with Iran. You need to back off again.
Now, you probably saw the massive banner being carried by the mourners at the funeral of the Supreme Leader, saying conveniently for international media in English that they're going to kill Trump.
Yeah, but it's convenient for Trump as well, because he'll deflect and he'll play like he's the real victim here, because the Iranians, hardliners, put out this idea of $100 million reward for his head. And what Trump does, having, remember, killed, assassinated Iran's own leader, the Supreme Leader, and dozens of officials, he says, I'm the one who's under threat now. And he'll use that as a pretext for why we have to continue to go after the Iranian leadership, who he has issued a series of derogatory names about this week.
Now, the problem, I suppose, for Trump is that if this continues on, and we saw a spike in the oil prices, not above $100, nowhere near it, but still a spike, which will be reflected in the pumps going forward. This is not good for the midterm prospects for the Republicans.
No, not at all. I mean, unless the Americans can break the Iranian control of the Strait of Hormuz and get, these several hundred tankers out, they really only have two options. And one is that they go back to war against Iran with the airstrikes. And even you would have to put in ground troops to get regime surrender. But as you note, that will have effects on the economy, serious effects on the economy. So that's why I think, in a way, that the Americans will go back and deal. At the same time, I don't see a significant improvement in the economy. I don't see the strait being reopened. So I think we're going to have this burden of higher inflation that's going to be an anchor on them if they can't manipulate the elections to try to get their majorities in Congress.
And that is the suspicion with the firing of two Democratic members of the four-man bipartisan electoral commission. The remaining Republican, there were only three of the four there. The remaining Republican resigned, presumably under direction from the White House. And this was the body that kind of oversees electoral processes and so on, and certifies that the way states are running things is kosher. So is this part of the plan?
We wait and see. I mean, there is, by the way, a federal election commission. There's a broader body. But this was a specific body that was brought in, if you remember, after the 2000 presidential election, the flap between George Bush and Al Gore, to work with states in terms of, make sure you've got effective ballot processes, make sure your voting machines are in order, make sure that you return the vote effectively, within the day or days after it's conducted. And now that day-to-day working relationship with the states, that's scrapped, that's gone. So at the very least, it provides a question mark about it, whether we have arrangements for November that are sound. But I suspect they'll let this body sit in limbo. I don't think they will put new people in it. And you're absolutely right that if there's the idea that they want to manipulate the results, you think, well, are there regulators in place that are going to be able to stop it?
Meanwhile, we have the missing Mitch McConnell. Now, online, the conspiracy theorists have been very active, suggesting that the Republican Party is now aping the old Soviet regimes, where, if you remember, Andropov and Brezhnev, I think, were nominally kept alive until they had sorted out the succession. But it was realized later that they had been dead for quite some time before their deaths were announced. If Mitch McConnell is effectively brain dead and being held on life support, there might be an electoral logic to keep him alive on life support just a little bit longer.
McConnell's seat is not, it's not like it's up in Kentucky, and that's a Republican state. So we're not talking about it for that. But what you have got, I think, beyond the Republicans trying to have, a significant majority in the Senate, is a split that's going on here between the Trumpists and what you might call the old line Republicans, of whom McConnell is one. And because, Pat, we also had another incident that most people don't know about. We had a Republican in the House who was gone for 3 months and then resurfaced a couple weeks ago because he's being treated for depression. In this case, what the Trumpists are doing is they're saying that the old line Republicans, they're the ones who are hiding this. They're the ones who are covering it up because they're worried about their declining influence. And there's a background to this, which is Donald Trump fell out with McConnell all the way back in 2021, you might remember, when McConnell said, well, we're not going to convict him over the incitement of the Capitol attack, but we'll let the courts deal with him. Trump never forgave him for that, and in fact drove him out as the Senate Majority Leader. So I think the McConnell story here is more of a story of the internal battle as Trump continues to consolidate his hold over the Republican Party.
And a number of prominent Republicans and commentators have said, we spoke to Mitch McConnell. We had long conversations with him, 20 minutes, and we spoke about world affairs. We spoke about domestic affairs. We even spoke to him about the Graham Plantner scandal in Maine. So, I mean, none of that sounds a bit plausible with a man on death's door, to be quite honest.
No, it's not. And there's where your Soviet analogy comes into play. No. Don't worry about Comrade Brezhnev or Comrade Andropov. You know, all is well here. And then, you know, several weeks later, you find out, no, it's not well. But look at the people who are saying this, Pat. These are people in the leadership, for example, like the current Senate Majority Leader, John Thune. It's others who are, again, that Republican Party that existed before Trump, guys who've been around for decades. And now they see their positions under threat, so they're trying to make believe that McConnell's absolutely fine, in the same way that I think they're trying to make believe that their own position as play-by-the-rules Republicans is fine, and it's not.
I mean, there has been no word from the McConnell side itself. And meantime, his wife heads off to China, even though the man had literally been stricken and taken into hospital in a critical condition. And maybe things are different on that side of the pond, but we all found that quite remarkable, that she would head herself off to China while her husband was on death's door.
Well, we don't know the condition, Pat. I need to hasten to add, we don't know, you know, if he's comatose. We don't know if he's actually, you know, is conscious. But if this is a case where he's expected to die in the next, you know, few days, or whether, you know, he could be around for weeks. So I don't want to second guess what they're doing as a family, because every family, let's take this away from politics, every family is going to go through grief when you have a situation like this. And in a way, I would prefer it in a way if we just let them be, but that's not going to happen because of the fact is everything is politics within the Republican camp right at the moment.
Turning to the NATO summit and what happened there, and you had Trump berating Spain, you had Trump once again casting his eyes on Greenland, and then you had Mark Rutte doing what Mark Rutte does, which is to cozy up to Trump and support pretty much everything that he wants, even though his own members had been slighted by Trump. But a welcome change, perhaps, and I say perhaps, on Ukraine.
It's a vague statement, but it's a significant one, in that what Trump said is that he's going to allow U.S. licenses to be issued for Ukraine to produce anti-ballistic missiles. Now, these anti-ballistic missiles are essential for defense against the Russian missile and drone attacks that continue to try to terrorize civilians, and indeed wind up killing scores of them, including this past week. It's the one real gap the Ukrainians have in terms of this. And the significance of those licenses is it goes down to the working level, which is Ukraine can now talk to U.S. companies, they can talk to U.S. government agencies about, can we get a production project started inside Ukraine with U.S. support? Same thing they're trying to do with European companies. I have to hasten to add, it takes time to set up those production facilities. This is not an immediate fix against the Russians. I also hasten to add that the United States is not going to directly provide anti-ballistic missiles, the best known of which are the Patriot missiles, in part because they've expended them all over the ill-fated war in Iran. But what it shows is that Trump believes Ukraine is winning. Having spent years thinking that Russia's winning, he's flipped. And that changes the political space, where you get other discussions between the Americans and the Ukrainians, for example, on drone production and technology.
Now, I want to refer to Trump's gaffes in Ankara at that NATO meeting. I mean, it was quite extraordinary, where he invited questions for the man sitting beside him, Zelensky, whom he said was Putin. Now, you could say it's a slip of the tongue, but have a listen to this.
Do you have a question for President Putin? Do you have a question for President Putin? Not Zelensky. Putin. No. Give us a question, not for Zelensky. Give us a question for Putin. Because I'm speaking to him today. Give me a good, hard question.
What's the status?
By the way, I will tell you, though, he's going to tell you that he wants it ended as soon as he can enter.
So he made a mistake and then tried to remedy it by suggesting, I'm going to talk to Putin later. If you guys have any questions for him, I'm happy to relay them. Was that credible?
No, he got confused. You know, he got confused and then he tried to cover it. But it wasn't the only slip that he made, Pat. I mean, all of a sudden he was referring to the Islamic Republic of Japan, which I'm sure surprised a lot of Japanese people that their emperor had changed religion overnight and embraced Islam. He was having to be led by President Erdogan, the host of the summit at times. He did not look well, and he was rambling and confused beyond the sound bites that you just referred to. Let's just talk about the fundamental here. If this had been Joe Biden, Pat, yeah. U.S. media wouldn't have been talking about anything else, any other topic for days. But because the U.S. media treat Trump with kid gloves, he gets away with the fact, which is that the man is not mentally coherent, and it's not just a question of the sound bites. Mm. He's not mentally coherent on policy.
And by the way, all of his engagements for the White House over the weekend have been canceled.
I would cut Trump a bit of slack because these summits are demanding. Travel is quite demanding. He is 80 years old. Okay, he gets a couple days off. I think the more serious issue here is whether he's got a grasp of his brief on the domestic and the overseas issues beyond his obsessions. And this takes us back to a couple of other topics that we've talked about. He has an obsession that he cannot appear to lose in Iran, even when he is failing in Iran, and he has an obsession with the election. And what worries me here is that Trump is not completely, he won't be declared mentally unfit to stay in office. So he can still create damage even though he may be mentally compromised at points.
Now, finally, I should look forward a bit and think of how he will be regarded by the Republican Party. I mean, he cannot run again. We don't know who's going to be president, be it a Republican or a Democrat. But I suspect that they will point back to this kind of evidence and say, you know, about his corruption, about his destruction of institutions, about his malign foreign policy. And they will say, as they might say in Ireland, ah, sure, he wasn't well.
Well, they might or they might not if his legacy continues. Let's assume, for example, not only that the Republicans, whether legitimately or by hook or crook, can get a majority in one or both of the houses in these elections. Well, that's two more years where they can say effectively, you know, look, we're in control of the government. And when the Trumpists are trying to consolidate their hold within the Congress. Let's talk about the fact that J.D. Vance, you know, is going to try to run for president in 2028. He's not going to do that by denouncing Trump. He's going to do it by praising Trump, even if this is the same J.D. Vance in 2016 compared Trump to Hitler. So there will be lip service to Trump for quite some time to come. And, you know, look, you know, you can't rule out that the Republicans might win the 2028 presidential election, and a Vance would cloak himself in the Trumpist mantle. We have to accept the fact, Pat, that Trump changed the discourse of American politics. He changed the system by damaging it. And to say, well, maybe we should have a rethink about it, or maybe we should expose the fact that the Wizard of Oz was, in fact, a very small man behind the curtain. There are too many important issues to assume that that's going to happen.
Well, he certainly changed the level and the coarseness of political discourse, that's for sure. Scott Lucas, professor at UCD's Clinton Institute. Scott, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.